Good afternoon. The century-old United States Rubber Company welcomes you to the Sunday afternoon concert of the New York Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra, the oldest symphonic organization in America. Today's concert is being broadcast, as usual, from Carnegie Hall, which has been the orchestra's home for 50 years and the center of music life in New York City. Artur Radzinski is music director of the Philharmonic Symphony Society. Our guest conductor again today is the noted director of the Minneapolis Symphony, Dimitri Mitropoulos, and the soloist of the afternoon is the brilliant Chilean pianist, Claudio Arau. The program includes the Suite Provençale by Darius Milhaud, the second piano concerto of Liszt, and Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, orchestrated by Ravel. In today's chapter from the American Scriptures, Carl Van Doren, Pulitzer Prize biographer and historian, will speak to us about our Bill of Rights. His guest will be House Jameson, who recently appeared in the Broadway production of The Patriots. Dimitri Mitropoulos has taken his place at the conductor's stand now and is about to lead the New York Philharmonic Symphony in our national anthem. Today's Philharmonic Symphony begins with a modern French work, the Suite Provençale by Darius Milhaud, whose 51st birthday occurred yesterday. Milhaud is now living in California, where he teaches at Mills College. His Suite Provençale is based on popular folk airs of Provence, the region of France in which he was born. It was introduced into the Philharmonic Symphony repertory by Mr. Mitropoulos at Christmas 1941. Milhaud is prominently identified with the most nationalist of modern French musical societies, the so-called Group of Les Six, formed in the early 1920s. Dimitri Mitropoulos is ready now to conduct the Philharmonic Symphony in the Suite Provençale by Darius Milhaud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dimitri Metropoulos has opened this afternoon's Philharmonic Symphony Concert, sponsored by United States Rubber Company, conducting the Suite Provençale by Darius Milo. This brings us to the featured solo work of the program, as the 39-year-old Chilean pianist, Claudio Arau, now joins Mr. Metropoulos and the orchestra to perform the second concerto in A major by Franz Liszt. Claudio Arau appeared in the United States as early as 1924, playing with the Boston and Chicago Symphony Orchestras. The next 17 years were spent in Europe and South America. He returned to the concert stage in this country in 1941. Born in a small Chilean town that has since been destroyed by earthquake, Arau was only five when he gave his first recital in Santiago. Later, his government awarded him a subsidy to study in Europe, where his teacher was a pupil of Liszt's. He eventually won several important prizes and fulfilled his government's expectation by achieving repeated triumphs as a performing artist in Europe and South America. As a sign that Chile considers its faith in the boyhood talents of Arau entirely fulfilled, there is now a street named for him in Santiago, and he's been made a citizen of honor. The Chilean government has appointed Arau a member of its diplomatic corps so that he may serve as an emissary of art from his country to the other American republics. He flew to New York from Mexico City to take part in this afternoon's Philharmonic Symphony concert. In the Mexican capital, he made four appearances as soloist with orchestra and gave a series of four recitals to capacity audiences. In one of his orchestral appearances, he introduced Mexican music lovers a new piano concerto by Carlos Chavez, Mexico's leading composer and conductor and the founder of the Mexican Symphony Orchestra. Chavez himself conducted. This concerto, although never before performed in its composer's native land, was played last season by the New York Philharmonic Symphony under Dimitri Metropoulos with Sergeant Eugene Liszt as soloist. Prior to his engagements in Mexico, Mr. Arau carried on his musical diplomatic mission by giving concerts in Central America and, of course, in the United States, where in a few seasons he has become one of the pianists most in demand by the American public. Last season, he played a total of 78 concerts and recitals. Claudio Arau has taken his place at the piano and is ready with Mr. Metropoulos and the Philharmonic Symphony musicians to play Liszt's Concerto No. 2 in A major for piano and orchestra.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The second piano concerto in A major by Liszt performed by Claudio Arau as soloist and of Dimitri Mitropoulos conducting, completes the first part of this afternoon's New York Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra concert presented by United States Rubber Company. At this point, Carl Van Doren, the American historian, and his guest for today, Hauff Jameson, are to bring us another weekly chapter from the American Scriptures. They will be presented after a momentary pause for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. We take pleasure now in presenting Carl Van Doren and his guest, Hauff Jameson. Mr. Van Doren.
The American Scripture I want to present to you today is a part of the basic law of our land. It comes from the first 10 amendments to the Constitution of the United States, the American Bill of Rights. These 10 amendments to the Constitution were adopted by the first Congress of the United States in 1789. Later amendments came so slowly, one by one, that it was 142 years before another 10 had been adopted and ratified. But the first 10 came at once in response to the will of the whole people. For the people were determined that if they were to begin life under a new constitution, it must, at the very outset, guarantee them their rights. Of course, the people didn't think of these as new rights. They were the old rights, as old as English liberty, under which Americans had lived while they were still colonies of the British Empire. Our people had taken up arms to defend those rights, which they thought were threatened by the imperial government. Then came the proposed Constitution of the United States. As proposed, it seemed to many Americans to pay too much attention to the powers of the government and too little to the rights of the people. Well, Americans who had rebelled against one government in defense of their ancient rights had no intention of giving up those rights under the new government, even if they had set it up themselves. So the American people demanded that a Bill of Rights be incorporated in the Constitution, and their willing Congress promptly consented, for Congress was no less American than the people. These were not mere theoretic rights thought up on paper. These were true and tried rights that came close to everybody, in his person, in his home, in his community. These were the rights of free men. I shall now ask Hauff Jameson to read for you from the Bill of Rights. But before Mr. Jameson reads Article 1, let me remind you of the fierce desire for freedom of worship that had brought Pilgrims and Puritans to New England and Quakers to Pennsylvania and Catholics to Maryland, of the triumphant fight for a free press in the colony of New York, of the freedoms of speech and assembly and petition which the Americans had won by long struggle and were determined to hold on to.
Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
The first step of a despotic government is to disarm the people. Look at the occupied countries today. The Americans of 1789 didn't intend to be disarmed. Family by family, settlement by settlement, they had defended themselves against the Indians. Many of them got their food, or part of it, by hunting. Many of the battles of the Revolution had been fought by men with their own muskets or rifles in their hands. So now,
Article 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Before the Revolution, many Americans had been forced, whether they liked it or not, to furnish quarters in their own houses for soldiers who had come to suppress them. There was to be no more of that.
Article 3. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law.
Nor should the new government have any more right than the old to arrest the people or to invade their houses except for lawful cause and in a lawful way. No secret police for Americans.
Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Life, liberty, and property were still to be secure against unjust acts. deliberate or ignorant, of government or courts. Accused men must continue to have rights till they were found guilty.
Article 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or in... except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation.
The ancient right of trial by jury, either in criminal or civil cases, must be maintained, for without this right, there would be no rights at all. Articles 6 and 7 guarantee the right of trial by jury in detail. Then comes an amendment, or rather an addition to the Constitution, which is in almost exactly the words used in the English Declaration of Rights of 1689 or the Virginia Declaration of Rights of 1776. There were laws to protect the government against violence on the part of the people. Let there be a law to protect the people against violence on the part of the government.
Article 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted.
And finally, two amendments, Articles 9 and 10, to protect the people and their states against future encroachments by the new federal government. The American people were not going to surrender rights without knowing what rights they were surrendering and why they were surrendering them. We have lived under the American Bill of Rights for 151 years. Back of every word lie the heat and tumult of many years of conflict, many men falsely accused and punished, many men put to death before these rights could be won and passed on to subsequent generations, even to us and our children. You and I have had these rights so long that we sometimes take them as a matter of course. When we do this, we are like people who live safe behind a seawall or levee which their ancestors have built and who themselves assume that seawall or levee will shut out the dangerous water forever. But the ocean or the river is still there, still dangerous. And the descendants must either keep up the barrier their forefathers raised, or else sooner or later have to do all that hard and bitter work again. Such barriers are down in totalitarian countries. The flood of tyranny has swept over the people, submerging them. Some of that dirty water has slopped or splashed over us, in the form of secret agents or secret friends of the enemy, hoping to spread dissatisfaction and disunion among our people. They tell us our rights as Americans are sometimes violated. We know that, and we regret it. They tell us our rights are not good for us. We deny that. We know such rights are good for us and good for all peoples. We know that so long as those rights are upheld, tyrants cannot rise to power. Tyrants can rise only by breaking down the rights of free men. And now, all over the world, free men are rising against these tyrants, making ready before long to overthrow them. The rights of free men will come back to them. And we, with fresh vigilance, shall keep the rights we have had the good fortune not to lose.
Today, Carl Van Doren has spoken to you about our Bill of Rights, parts of which were read by House Jameson. From Carnegie Hall, we resume this afternoon's New York Philharmonic Symphony Concert under sponsorship of United States Rubber Company as Dimitri Mitropoulos conducts Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition as orchestrated by Ravel. These musical sketches, originally for piano, were written as a memorial tribute to Mussorgsky's friend, the artist Victor Hartmann, after viewing a commemorative exhibit of his paintings. Hartmann's death was one of the great sorrows in Mussorgsky's life, and he and other friends of the painter arranged the showing of his oils and watercolors as a eulogy more eloquent than words. The musical impressions that Mussorgsky set down were transcribed for orchestra by Ravel at the request of Serge Koussevitzky for a Paris performance 20 years ago. There are 10 sketches introduced by a promenade that might suggest the entrance of a visitor into the gallery. The music then follows him on his inspection of each picture. Plucked strings with woodwinds, muted brass, and descending scales indicate that the first is a picture of gnomes. The ensuing scenes are interspersed here and there with additional promenades, as Mussorgsky, whom we may take to be the spectator, shows us a medieval castle, a scene of quarreling children and nurses in the Tuileries gardens, and then a lumbering Bidlow, a Polish ox cart. The Ballet of Unhatched Chicks, next on the tour, tells its own story by means of the orchestra, which then goes on to comment on the colloquy between a rich merchant and a favor-seeking annoyer. There follow in succession scenes of the market at Limoges and the catacombs of Rome, a sketch of the legendary witch's hut built on fowl's legs, and finally, with a solemn tolling of church bells, the great gate at Kiev. Now, Dmitri Metropoulos has returned to the platform to conduct the Ravel orchestration of Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Pictures and an Exhibition by Mussorgsky has been performed in the Ravel Orchestration by the New York Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra under the leadership of Dimitri Mitropoulos. Before taking you to the CBS World Newsroom for the latest bulletins, we have a brief message from United States Rubber Company.
Most of us are doing so little driving these days, we're inclined to forget some of the essentials of automobile maintenance. Air pressure of tires too often is allowed to fall dangerously low. That wastes tire mileage. Batteries starve for water. They miss the frequent recharging they used to get from regular driving. Lubrication, oil changes, wheel alignment, and brake adjustment are being neglected. Yet most of these automobiles must last the duration of the war. Tires on most of these cars must go another year and maybe longer. We can't expect, even for the most essential driving, many new synthetic rubber tires until next year. This situation is so serious, we want to repeat today the words of the Car Owner's Creed, first published by United States Rubber Company on January 5th, 1942, the day the tires were rationed, the first rationing order of the war. Here is the Car Owner's Creed. I will drive my car only when absolutely necessary, avoiding extra trips by doubling up with my neighbors whenever possible. I will drive at a moderate speed to avoid burning up my tires. I will start and stop my car slowly and slow down on turns to avoid grinding off the tire tread. I will park carefully to avoid scraping and bumping my tires against curbs. I will keep my brakes adjusted to avoid spotty tread wear. I will use my brakes carefully, shifting into second gear going down steep hills to avoid excessive tread wear. I will keep my wheels correctly aligned and balanced to avoid uneven tread wear. I will have my tires cross-switched at least every 5,000 miles to increase my total mileage. I will have the air pressure of all my tires checked every week to get the greatest possible mileage. I will have my tires and tubes inspected regularly as a precaution against future trouble and wasted rubber. To this we need to add today only the two recent government decrees. Drive under 35 miles an hour and have your tires recapped before it's too late.
And now the latest CBS World News. The Allied invasion of southern Italy is moving in good stride today. The British Eighth Army has widened its bridgehead to a strip of land more than 40 miles across and about 3 miles deep. British and Canadian spearheads, striking swiftly up the west coast from Reggio Calabria, have joined forces with a commando party which landed earlier and took Bagnara, 16 miles north on the coastal road. At the southern end of the front, below Reggio, other Allied forces have battered their way to Melito at the tip of the Italian toe. Enemy resistance is described as surprisingly weak, and already some 2,000 prisoners have been taken, most of them Italian. According to a Russian communique received just a few minutes ago, the Red Army has captured 120 more towns and villages in the Donetsk Basin, including the large rail junction and manufacturing city of Artemovsk. In the Ukraine, a three-pronged drive is menacing the steel center of Stalino, the capture of which is expected almost at any time. In the Southwest Pacific, Allied Liberator bombers have showered 84 tons of bombs on the important Japanese base at Lae, New Guinea. General MacArthur's communique says the base was virtually wiped out. And those are the news highlights to the moment.
United States Rubber Company has brought you the New York Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra, Dimitri Mitropoulos conducting, and Claudio Arrau as piano soloist, together with Carl Van Doren, Paus Jameson, and the latest bulletins from CBS World News headquarters. The next two Sunday concerts in this sponsored series will be led by Howard Barlow, noted founder and conductor of the Columbia Broadcasting Symphony, and a frequent visiting conductor of the New York Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra. His first program a week from today at 3 o'clock Eastern Wartime consists of Lalo's overture to Le Roi Dix, The Sea by the late modern Englishman Frank Bridge, and a Wagnerian group including a Siegfried Idol and excerpts from Lohengrin and Die Meistersinger. 2 weeks from today, on Sunday, September 19th, Mr. Barlow will be joined by the brilliant French pianist Robert Cassadius as soloist, who will play the Mozart Concerto in A major. In next Sunday's chapter from the American Scriptures, Carl Van Doren will have as his guest Raymond Edward Johnson. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.